Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I've been doing the same open for 11 years on these Baseball America podcasts. I'm John Manuel, along with J.J. Cooper. We have Carlos Collazo here, and the ghost from Baseball America podcast past, Matt Blood, the national team director for the 18U program for USA Baseball, back. He doesn't have his bling with him. We thought we'd have a gold medal here. Come back from Thunder Bay. Couldn't get that through customs, I guess, Matt. But happy to have you here. And I'm sure you have it somewhere, just not here, right?
Yeah, my four-year-old son's wearing it right now. I think he might have taken it to daycare for show and tell or something.
Well, see, this is just a podcast. It's not a Facebook Live. But I will remind people that our Facebook Lives and podcasts are all sponsored by Baseballism, the official off-the-field brand of baseball. Offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com for hats, shirts, and much more today. But they have no gold medals, so give Baseballism time. But the U.S. 18U program now has four straight gold medals. Matt Blood, you've been the national team director for two of them, but a lot of gold. And a very shiny trophy that I got to see for the World Baseball Classic. No gold medal, but just there's the eagle, which I didn't see that in the office. But then there was the very shiny trophy, Tiffany's trophy, but the World Baseball Classic sends out. So a lot of bling in the USA Baseball offices. This has been a calendar year of gold at 18U, gold at 12U, right? 15U, the college national team won all three of the series that were the pinnacle for its summer tournament, and of course the big leaguers with the gold medal back in with the championship back in March. Pretty good year for USA Baseball, I'd say.
Yeah, this is a year to be proud of. Like you just said, you just rattled it all off. Basically, having as good a success as you can have at each program throughout the year. You know, and winning the World Baseball Classic was thrilling and. Was a great start for our year, and the 15U team did well. The 12U team did great, the college team, and then you know we were able to finish this off there in Canada. So I have to think we're pretty pleased with the way this year's gone.
But 18U now, there is this. I mean, you inherited a program that had won back-to-back gold. Anything less than gold would be uncivilized. But this, it seemed like I see that. I guess having that high a bar to surmount. If they raise the bar, you guys seem like you were gonna clear it by just as much as you possibly could. This team didn't just win gold; it didn't lose a game.
13-0,
including training, and then in the World Cup in Thunder Bay, Ontario, where the championships were, 9-0, 0.47 ERA, and outscored teams 61-5. So it's kind of like, halfway to a Cleveland Indians win streak, basically, to put it in big league context. But you guys basically big leagued in the correct sense the rest of the field. You guys were very rarely challenged. I'm sure that wasn't the goal. Did you guys almost, I have to imagine you exceeded expectations by going there and dominating to that level, because I can't imagine you expected to outscore team 61-5.
Well, the goal is obviously gold. I mean, that's what the USA standard is. And you know, that's the first thing that we're after. Whether we win by 10 or we win by one, you know, we're trying to win the gold medal. It's gold or bust. But it is baseball, and I think I even mentioned this last year, but you know, to give yourself the best chance to win, you want to put together the absolute best team that you can, because in baseball, you know, you can run up against one good pitcher and one good team, and you could end up, you know, losing your chance to win a gold medal. So, you know, my goal with this program is to put together absolutely the best team that we can, and I think this year, you know, we came pretty about as close to that goal as possible. I'd say we're pretty pleased with the way it went. Now the goal is to keep it going, try to get to five worlds in a row.
Yeah. Matt, you mentioned that running into a pitcher in baseball can be a challenge, and it seemed like for you guys, you were challenging teams every single time out. I know before this, on paper, the strength of this team was the pitching staff. Can you just talk a little bit about how you had to go and funnel down from trials to finalize your pitching staff? Obviously, a ton of really great, talented pitchers to choose from with this really deep high school class on the mound. But, I mean, going into Thunder Bay and allowing four earned runs through the whole time really speaks to the talent that you guys had. Can you kind of speak to just how talented this group is compared to years past?
Yeah, the strength of the team was the depth on the mound, but also the caliber of defense that we were able to play, which those two played hand in hand, as well as our defense played. It helped the pitchers out. And going back to trials, it was really difficult. I mean, we had, I would say, five guys who all deserved to be on this team that ended up not making it. I can think of, like, Lenny Torres, for example, was almost perfect during trials and couldn't make the team. And you feel bad for him. It's like, okay, well, who did we take that we shouldn't have taken? And there's nobody. You know, we just ran out of spots. You know, that's one of the harder things about this is seeing players perform and do well and not be able to select them and have to tell them, you know, that they're not going to be able to continue on with us. But, from a director's perspective, that's what you want. You know, you want a lot of depth so that if you do have some attrition, you're able to fill, you know, the next guy up mentality, and the next guy up is just as good as the next guy. So.
With that, with the defense on this team, I mean, you look around, really just around the diamond, and it was plus defenders, I mean, almost everywhere you
looked. Every position.
Which?
Every position. You had a plus defender at every position. Our outfield was three center fielders just spread out across the outfield, plus runners with two of them have plus arms. All of them have good instincts. You could put all of them in all three positions, and they would all be plus outfielders. So ball hit in the air with any hang time at all, it's going to get caught. You know, Greg Maddux can get his stopwatch out in, you know, 3.5 seconds, and the ball is going to be caught. And then on the infield, Nolan Gorman was outstanding at third base. Terang and Carter Young up the middle are just really fun to watch. They gobbled everything up. They turned some really big double plays, and Casas bailed out our arms multiple times, and he's a professional first baseman. And then both of our catchers were both great defensively. Both of them caught the velocity that we had, like they were only throwing 80, 85, which was really fun to watch, and block balls, and they both have plus arms, and teams were scared to run on us. So, you know, every single position we did not have a deficiency defensively. And then on the bench we had Brandon Dieter, who could easily have gone out there and played just as well defensively as the two other middle infielders that we had. So, you know,
people who don't know, and I don't think most people do know this, you had a 20-man roster. Mm-hmm. So every team, you know, you're playing other 20-man rosters. But that's, you talked about the hard part of the job. The easy part is, you know, number one baseball country in the world. You're getting to pick the cream of the crop of the high school talent. for this team. The hard part is you can only have 20. And you are making a team. You're not making a showcase roster. You're not making a team for 162 games or 56 games or 30. You're making it for 2 weeks, basically, of games that you really, you know, that matter the most. So roster composition is difficult, but you also, you have to kind of put a premium on some versatility. And I guess the other X factor for any team, but especially this team, is makeup. You got to find guys who will put that team over self. And that's, man, all these guys are stars in their own minds. And they were all, I mean, this is an all-star team that you have to get to by a team mentality. So how have you guys been able to do that year after year? And I guess this year, the coaching staff, Andy Stankiewicz, the head coach at Grand Canyon, former big league infielder, kind of helps head that up with you. But what's that process like of whittling, was it 96 guys at Tournament of Stars down to 20 players? That is not easy. And kind of how do you rank, where does talent versus makeup versus fit, kind of how do those things all fit in?
Yeah, you know, ideally you have talent and makeup together, but it's not easy. We brought 80 guys to the Tournament of Stars, and that's the first challenge, is making sure that we have the right 80 guys there and that we have information on them before they arrive so that we're able to give them a full shake, you know.
So when you're picking those 80 guys, I mean, I'm backing it up a little bit, but picking those 80 guys, how many of those guys did you see prior to them coming to TOS? Did you go see them yourself? I know a lot of it is obviously USA Baseball. You can call whoever you can.
Yeah, I probably saw 75% of them in some form before they showed up, whether it was in the spring or the summer before, or at our national team development program,
right?
Which is a huge feeder for this team. We like to really know the guys before they show up.
No surprises.
Exactly.
Fewer surprises.
Yeah, I mean, because I've seen it happen where some really good players just don't have a good week at the Tournament of Stars. I mean, Tristan Casas was not good this year at the Tournament of Stars. Now, fortunately, we had him the year before. We knew him really well. And, you know, people would ask me, well, what's wrong with Tristan? I say, don't worry about Tristan. Don't worry about that guy. He's going to be just fine.
In terms of not worrying about him, I mean, you had many MVPs, but he's the one. They named one MVP of the tournament. He was MVP of the World Cup.
And he was. Three home runs. He absolutely was. I mean, he's the one who slugged us through the big games and got, you know, we felt like if we could get three runs on the board, we were going to win. And three runs felt like a 10-run lead with this pitching staff and defense.
Right.
And, you know, he had a two-run homer against Japan. He had a huge game against Canada and against Korea the first time, and then obviously in the gold medal game. So the games that were our most tightly contested and highest leverage games, he was right there for us. And that just kind of speaks to his makeup, but because he's a professional in everything that he does. But, yeah, stepping back to the process and how we do things. I mean, bringing in the 80 guys it's a very long, tedious, and difficult process that never ends. I mean, I'll be working on it tomorrow, you know, for next year's team, mm-hmm. and even the next year's team. You know, we're diving into those kids who are in contention for the 2019 World Cup and already. And so getting to know their makeup is very important. You know, and it's, you would think that everybody who makes the national team would be happy to be on the team and would be okay with whatever role they are given, but that's just not the way it necessarily is. And so you really got to preach that, you know, this is not a showcase. This is not the typical event that these players go to. This is an actual team that's training to win mm-hmm. a tournament against other really high-level teams that do get to practice together. So
and that are very motivated.
That are very, very motivated. You know, like I said, we have a target on our back, and it's pass-fail. You either win the gold medal or you failed. And so there's a lot of pressure that could be perceived from that if not approached the right way. But, you know, getting to know their makeup and whether they can handle that team mentality, whether they are guys that we want to represent the United States, you know, on a big stage, guys that we want to travel with and put our trust in, you know, to handle themselves like professionals, you know, when the game's not being played as well. That's a big part of putting together this roster. And it played into some decisions that we made ultimately at the end. But we were really excited about the makeup of this group, but it still took a lot of work to get everybody on the same page, you know, when it came to at-bats and playing time and whatnot.
And kind of, you spoke to Tristan's experience with this team before, but you guys had several other players who have experience with the 18U team and then 15U, with Carter Young being the youngest player on the team, but bringing some experience to the table, and then Mike Ciani, Jared Kilenic, and who's your fourth one? Bryce Terang at shortstop. So can you kind of speak to how much that helps either speed up that process, having those guys help their teammates maybe buy into the team mentality you talk about, and just the benefit of having that much returning experience on this team?
Yeah, having those five guys, because I'm going to add Carter Young in there as well, mm-hmm. was invaluable. Yeah, you saw it especially in the Japan game, which was, you know, our second game. We're trying to feel our way into the tournament and see exactly how we stack up. Mm-hmm. And we know Japan is always a contender. And so we go into that game, you know, ready to go, and they threw some arms out there that were really, really difficult. But, you know, Casas and Ciani got us on the board early, you know, and then later on, Kelnick, you know, hit a big double for us, and Terang and Ciani scored. So our veterans are the ones who got us through that game, and pretty much throughout the whole tournament. They were the ones who led us. Ciani was the captain of the team and the leader, and Casas is the same. He's just a little bit, does it in a more quiet way, but when he does speak, you know, everybody listens. And then Terang and Kelnick both did a great job as well. So having those guys was crucial.
Yeah. And then with the Japan game, you guys struck out quite a bit in that one. I know that was
23 point chase is a lot of points.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and kind of talking to you and Andy throughout the process, you know, a big part of it was trying to get your players to buy into this team-oriented approach and not necessarily trying to pull everything or hit everything out of the park like maybe they're used to with the showcase circuit. How happy were you with how they adjusted throughout the tournament, and how hard is it to kind of switch that mentality as a player when you're used to going all these showcases before you come to Team USA, where you're really trying to just showcase what you can do personally as a player? How hard is that to kind of get their mindset shifted?
It's difficult. At the end, we ended up being very happy with mm-hmm. the way it went down, and we have a thing called the National Team Development Program, which is kind of like our instructional league. We hold it in the summer, and it's basically for our team for the following year. And fortunately, you know, Terang was there, Carter Young was there this year, Casas was there, Ethan Hankins. And so we were able to get a jump start with some of these guys. And our hitting coach, Greg Ritchie, has been there the last 2 years, so we got some continuity there. So with some of them, we were able to just kind of keep that process going, and the learning curve was shortened. But mm-hmm. with some others, you know, we had to break them in within 2 weeks, and it's not easy to do. But to their credit, they battled. I mean, yeah, we struck out 23 times. We knew that if we had a weakness, it was that we were very left-handed dominant mm-hmm. in the lineup, and we had a feeling that some of these teams were going to throw lefties with a lot of secondary stuff, and that's exactly what Japan did. But he had to earn every one of those strikeouts. I mean, we took him deep in counts. Every count seemed like it was full.
This was Kento Kawabata. 15 strikeouts.
Yeah, and he pitched a lot in that tournament, to say the least. But but he was exceptional that night. But he wasn't punching us out in 3 to 4 pitches.
Mm-hmm. 136 pitches in 5 2/3 innings.
Exactly.
We're recording this on Wednesday. I just was watching that Indians game last night, and Matt Boyd only gave up one run through 5 innings against the Indians. But the Indians, I think he had 117 pitches. That's pretty analogous. I mean, this guy had 15 strikeouts, but to get into, not finish 6th inning, but to get into the 6th inning, 136 pitches for this young man. So
six, it was walks, not, right? Was it six or five?
Six walks.
Yeah.
So it was not easy. It was
no,
not easy.
No. But we had runners on every inning. Yeah. So we had one or two runners on base every inning.
And you were saying they were all competitive at bats.
Very competitive. He wasn't dominating any hitter. Now, so he ended up striking out a lot of hitters.
It's a credit to both sides.
No doubt. I mean, that kid was gutsy that night. There was an hour rain delay, at least an hour and a half, and he stayed out there and just kept throwing every 8 minutes in between, you know, the grounds crew trying to get the field dry.
Yes,
you know, and so I'll give him credit. I mean,
he upheld his honor in the very least.
I think he threw like 300 pitches that day, to be honest. You know, but he,
Koshin, he's like, you know, this is compared to Koshin.
He's just training for Koshin.
This is nothing.
Exactly. But, you know, we obviously wouldn't do that to our guys, but we took Marceau out right after that first inning and put Weathers in, and Weathers did a great job. But, you know, our lefties battled. And what I'm trying to say is our left-handed hitters battled that game, even though we had some guys striking out 3, 4, even 5 times, but they weren't going down easy.
Mm-hmm. And no one who played for the U.S., no one in the lineup played and did not strike out. 23 strikeouts, so fairly evenly distributed. I want to throw this one quote in before we move off the subject, before you continue, Carlos, where at the end of it, it's on the World Baseball Softball Classic website. The Korean manager said, "The American team was much bigger and stronger than we are. This always happens with Western players, but I must admit, these kids are also technically impressive." So that probably went through the Google Translate a little bit, A. But B, so it wasn't just talent. It was talent and skill, is what it sounds like. And I'm saying that kind of... Right. I'm saying that to kind of juxtapose. I don't want people to just think... Well, we have talked about the showcase aspect, and that's an important part to bring it up. And we're talking about 23 strikeouts. But this wasn't... Didn't sound like you guys kind of were a show-and-go kind of team. And that's... That's a great accomplishment for Andy and that coaching staff, Greg Ritchie, like you talked about.
Talk about the base running
and Mosiello.
As well.
I mean, our coaching staff was exceptional this year. You know, Andy did a great job managing it all, and teaching the defense, especially. Bill Mosiello was, you could kind of call him our offensive coordinator, or whatever you want. But he's a brilliant baseball
fills that role at TCU and fills it extremely well.
His philosophies on base stealing and you know when to bunt, when not to bunt, which is most of the time, you know, it was just really impressive to watch, and our players really got an advanced experience when it came to coaching with those two guys. And then our hitting coach Greg Ritchie is as good a hitting coach as you're ever going to find. And the hitters all loved him, and they all made improvements with him. And then our pitching coach, Ricky Meinhold, a lot of them knew him from the year before. He's got a great demeanor about him, and you know he led this staff to less than a 0.5 runs a game. So I think he did a pretty good job too. I kind of joked around with him though. I was like, Ricky, man, your job's pretty easy. All you got to do is stand over there, and then when one pitcher throws a ball, you just say, "Hey, throw strikes," and then he throws a strike. And okay, good job. You know, with some of these pitchers, it seemed like it was just amazing to watch them go about their business. But no, he did a lot more than that. But it was just a little joke he and I had.
Mm-hmm. That's a good joke. I like that joke.
And that is, when you kind of dive into some of the players. I mean, that's the thing that when we look back on this, as great as the defense and all was, the thing that statistically obviously stands out, which the defense played a part in it, was this pitching staff just went out there game after game after game. You know, John had a scout who basically described it as 9 aces.
Yeah, no, there's Coach Greg Hamilton of Canada basically said 1 through 9, USA has 9 aces they're throwing out there. So, I mean, clearly other teams saw it and respected that as well, and honestly probably wish they had that too, because when you talk about
some of those aces, what is it that we're going to remember, that you're going to remember about this team?
I mean, they not only had stuff, but they had command and pitchability, you know, and ability to hold the runners and to stay composed in these games. I mean, it wasn't just pure overpowering, you know, because these teams figure out ways to put the ball in play for the most part, you know, especially the Asian teams. And I was really impressed with the way our pitchers pounded the zone. We didn't have many walks, and they competed. Now, they also knew our defense was going to gobble the ball up, and they did. So we had a lot of pretty quick innings. But I don't know if you want to talk specifically about each individual guy or which guys in particular. But
I think the guy that we have at the top of our draft rankings is Ethan Hankins. He's the obvious guy to start with.
He's pretty good,
and he wasn't your gold medal starter. So I guess I'll start with the baseline that is easy for you, is that last year, let's just compare kind of apples and apples. The top high school pitcher coming out of last year's draft class was Hunter Green, who did not pitch for the 18U national team last year. Played third base, but did not pitch. But he was a top high school guy in the class. It's unfair in some ways to compare people to Green, who had the easiest velocity. I think on this podcast last year, he said he had the best arm he'd ever seen. So, and I think that's arguable. He has the best arm in the world. Right. You know? So Ethan doesn't have that. But what elements. What do you see? What have you seen this summer out of Ethan Hankins that could make him repeat what Hunter Green did and be the top drafted high school player, high school pitcher in this class?
Yeah, well, first of all, you mentioned not the gold medal game. I mean, he very easily could have pitched in the gold medal game, and we would have loved for that to happen, but we wanted to get there first.
Right.
You know? And we knew that we had, you know, Matt Livertor also, who we had a ton of confidence in. So it was, you know, pick your poison between 1A and 1B. And winning that Korea game, the first time we played them, was crucial because we knew that that would set us up to save our best pitchers to where we would have them all ready to go in the gold medal game.
And same thing as last year. I mean, Hans Krause
right.
was the guy who pitched the gold medal game yeah. last year and wasn't the best prospect on the team, was a good prospect, was mm-hmm. drafted high, but yeah. you wouldn't have lined it up probably at the beginning of the summer thinking he would have been the guy, but by the right. as it developed, he was yeah. the guy.
Yeah, I mean, Hankins is, in my opinion, he's an elite talent. He's got a great arm. You know, not the... It's hard to have the best arm in the world. Mm-hmm. That's one person, but
yes.
but his arm is right up there. And what's really impressive about him is his, you know, he's 6'7", but he's a really good athlete. He's got really good feel for his delivery and body control. You know, he's got a lot of moving parts, but he knows what they're all doing.
The 6'7" Georgia right-hander, he's going to get Wainwright comps.
Sure.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he can get Wainwright's curveball, then he's going to be a one forever. You know, because he's got the fastball velocity, he's got control of it, and flashes of pretty good command, and it's a very lively pitch. You know, he throws a breaking ball that's I would say average right now. That's something he's going to continue to develop. It's come a long way since last year, and we were really pleased with it. And the changeup's developing too. In my opinion, he's probably the best arm in the country in terms of prospect status right now.
And when you watch Ethan Hankins pitch, if you guys haven't seen him, he has one of the quickest tempos that I've seen mm-hmm. from a pitcher. How hard is it to kind of handle that when things are tense and things get emotional? I know I talked to Andy after the Korea game, I believe is maybe the toughest game you guys had throughout the tournament. He said sometimes Ethan can get a little emotional, maybe go a little bit too quickly, but what are your thoughts on that up-tempo style that he uses how he handles it?
He's just very invested in the game. Mm-hmm. He's locked in to the game almost too much. I mean, he's a fierce competitor, and he doesn't want anybody to get on base, and when they do, he takes it personally. And so he works really fast because – you know, he wants to get them out. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to get them out, get off the mound, get the offense on, and he wants to pitch to every single hitter throughout every single game. You know, and so that's just part of his personality, I think. I mean, he's just very anxious to go and get that hitter. You know, and you saw a little bit of the Japanese team of the Korean team trying to slow him down, and he. He was kind of jawing back with him a little bit, and you know that's a little bit maybe what Andy was talking about. But I mean, he's young too. I mean, he's still 17. I think he turns 18 in April maybe. You know, so you know he's still got upside to him, and he's got a chance to be one of the best pitchers in the world.
But looking at last year's team, just because I have it in front of me, I mean the highest drafted pitcher. I mean, we're just the level of this year's pitching seems exceptional, not just because of the numbers, but just eyeing it from a talent. I mean, last year, the guys who got multiple starts were Krause and Nick Prado. Mm-hmm. I know JJ loves Nick Prado on the mound. But
control and command.
But Blaine Enloe, CJ Van Eyck, Logan Allen, Mitch Stone, Shane Boz was on that team, but he really had a breakout, kind of got better after being on the USA team. I'm looking for, I mean, Hagen Danner, who was drafted, what, as a catcher, I think, right? So this year's pitching talent, I'm not trying to say anything about last year's team. Last year's team won gold, did its job, dominated. But, again, Hunter Green didn't pitch.
This year's pitching was better than last year.
It was exceptionally, by
it was
factor.
Way deeper, way deeper and more top-heavy.
Okay.
I mean, our pitchers last year did a great
job. Nine aces.
Yeah. Our pitchers last year did a great job, but this year's group was on a different level when it came to stuff and and pitchability and dominance.
And Carlos, I think, was it you or was it Mike Lanana in our last podcast about this, talked about Liberatore?
I think we both talked about Liberatore.
You guys are both on Team Liberatore.
Yeah, I think my first look at him was at the Under Armour All-America game when he just dominated for three innings.
Because he was held back. He was like, if it goes extra innings, we're going to use it.
Yep. And his approach to the game is really interesting from my perspective, just talking to him about how he kind of goes about pitching. He seems like a very cerebral type guy, but what about Liberatore makes him so effective for you? It seems like he's got really good control of three pitches and just goes after hitters.
He's similar to Hankins in the way that he's got really good feel for his delivery and for control and his secondary stuff. He's very competitive as well. He's an interesting kid because he's not like that off the field. Like off the field, he's a left-hander, put it that way, and he's a joy to be around. But on the mound, he's very intense. He's very competitive. He takes it personally, him and Ethan were both dominant, and either one of them we would have felt comfortable with almost every one of our arms on the mound. But those two give us the best chance to win.
Six scoreless for Liberatore in the gold medal game.
And against Mexico, same thing.
And it's against a Korean team that is fairly physical. You think of the KBO, JJ, we think of it as big boys who bat flip, and it's a power approach. And just talking to a scout this week, he said, in the last 15, 20 years, the Korean amateurs have evolved. It's not since Yu Chu, when South Korea won it in 2000, 2001 in Edmonton, and he was the MVP of that tournament. He was the exception at the time, though, as a power kind of approach.
The Korean team was really good.
Right.
Now, position player-wise, they were the team that we targeted as, this is the best offensive team here.
Right.
Now, on the mound, we thought Japan was a little scarier. Maybe that was because Japan had a lot more lefties.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that the Korean team's best arms were all right-handed. Now, that one guy,
it's only a good matchup.
Guok was outstanding.
Bean Guok.
Because he had split changeup that really gave us some fits. But the Korean team was really good. I mean, their shortstop, he's a prospect. He's probably going to...
Jiwon Bae signed with the Braves. It's not official, but
he's going to be a major leaguer. Yeah. I mean, he's good. He can run. He's a 60 runner. He's got a 60 arm. He can play shortstop.
Hak Ju Lee type.
I'm on him. You know, just watching him from a scout's view, I would be very. I thought he was the best international prospect. Well, he would be the first guy I would have taken.
Gotcha.
Off of all the other countries, he's the first guy I would have taken. And then they just had one of their hitters, the guy who hit the double off of us in the first inning. I think he was the first pick in the draft for the Korean draft yesterday or something. And he's a really good hitter. And they also their DH. I mean they were a strong offensive team, and you know our pitchers and our team made something that's really difficult to do look fairly easy, and it's not that easy. It's really not, and that's just kind of a testament to how good these guys were.
Yeah, the Japanese team, like we said, very outstanding on the mound. The U.S. team a little bit deeper on the mound. Those two starters that we started off talking about, you guys had to have some variety, like you said, your pitching staff. You talked about the game that was rained out, or the rain delay, I should say, against Japan, where Landon Marceau started, and then Ryan Weathers, the left-hander, another left-hander. That was, again, for a top-level opponent, number one world-ranked Japan, JJ.
Number one world-ranked.
That's important.
We're waiting for those rankings to update. I can't imagine that's going to still be the case.
But so Weathers, son of a big leaguer, what made him the guy that you put kind of in that, in case of emergency, break glass and break out Ryan Weathers' role? And
how nice it to have Ryan Weathers in that
right.
role.
Yeah, exactly. It's a kind of
well,
kind of
he was the guy we trusted as much as anybody. We knew exactly what we were going to get out of him. A focused competitor who's going to throw strikes with velocity from the left side and a good breaking ball. You know, and we could have easily started him in one game. But knowing that we only had a few lefties, you know, we just kind of wanted to hold him as our ace in the hole, just in case. You know, you never know in these type of events what's going to happen. And so we had it lined up, and I actually talked to him during our training phase and just kind of told him what we were thinking about for him. Like, hey, you're not slated to be a starter, but that's because of how much we respect and value having you available at any given moment mm-hmm. in this tournament. And it ended up being exactly what we needed when Marceau couldn't pitch again after that long rain delay. He's like, okay, well, now we got our backup plan, which we had all along, ready to go just in case something like this happened. And he rolled out there and did exactly what we thought he would do. And then the same thing happened against Korea.
Right.
You know?
And Marceau, Dieter, and Kumar Rocker were your other three starters. Landon Marceau, he started only that one game kind of after that one-inning start, kind of went into more of a kind of a bridge, kind of middle relief role.
Well, we had Rocker and Marceau were the two other starters that really hadn't gotten enough work yet.
Right.
So we went into that Canada game and with a similar mentality as we did the Japan game.
With a very physical, Canadian lineup, a potent
They were probably the second best offensive team. You know, we like Korea's offense and we like Canada. We like both of theirs, almost the same. No, Canada's pitching wasn't as deep as some of the other teams, but their offense was very good.
And a little extra. They're playing at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never hurts. And you know, we went to that game knowing that we had both Rocker and Marceau fully ready to go. And so we started Rocker knowing that Marceau was in our back pocket in the case that we needed to break the glass.
Was that just like almost like let's compare and contrast the 5'11", 180 right-hander with the 6'4", 260 right-hander too?
I mean, not really. It was just that's just the way it broke down. I mean, if Marceau had been able to go 7 against Japan,
right,
then everything gets pushed back a little bit.
I'm just endlessly fascinated by Kumar Rocker because he is just so
you and the Japanese the media. The Japanese media followed him around everywhere.
Really?
Oh yeah. Well, apparently his name means bear.
Okay. How did Kumar handle that?
Great. He handled it great. And there was one. I mean, they would ask, "Where's Kumar? Where's Kumar? He's over there." They'd be videoing him through the screen just during a game, and he's just in the dugout.
That's fantastic.
They interview him, and they'd be like, "Can you make the sound of a bear?" And, you know, So, they loved Kumar.
How was the American media there? I'm sorry, that's a joke. We weren't even there. We were sort of there, but
yeah. Well, maybe next time.
Yes. Maybe next time.
Maybe we need to host this thing in the States, and you guys will come.
Make it happen. Make it so. I'll work on that.
And then
Brandon Dieter was your other starter again. He's kind of like the tenth man in a way, wasn't he? I
mean, yep. He was the tenth man on both sides.
Right.
And not because he was the best. Worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because of his role, and his makeup too. You know, that person has to have a special type of makeup, and we knew that he did. We could have started him against just about anybody and felt like we were going to get all zeros. That kid is really impressive. On the mound, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's very similar to Marceau. But also defensively, he's as reliable as you're going to find, and he puts together quality at bats. You know, it just so happened, you know, that he was our next man up. In the field, we didn't need him because we didn't have an injury of any type. But if we had, we would have felt great putting him in there. And on the mound, you know, we kind of targeted him for that Australia game, knowing that if it did mean something, then he would dominate him. Mm-hmm. But that also allowed us to keep Libertor ready for the next day, to go against Korea. So he was an invaluable piece to this team's. And he embraced that role, which is really nice to see.
I'm going to give you a quick on the rotation. The quick best tools, best fastball out of those five.
Hankins. Guys.
How about best curveball? We'll separate curveball and slider.
Out of the starters.
Out of the starters.
The best curveball.
Yeah.
I'll go with.
Or if there's not a curveball,
I'll go with Libertor.
Okay. How about best slider? Is there Wilcox. A slider in that group? Okay. Because I don't think we talked about Wilcox much. About Wilcox.
Cole Wilcox threw 9 innings, struck out 7, allowed 1 unearned run.
Shoot, the slider's hard, though, because, I mean, Marceau has got a filthy cut slider.
I say we break it to the whole pitching staff, all these guys.
Rocker's got a plus slider in the upper 80s. He probably has the best one, to be honest. I mean, so does JT Ginn, mm-hmm. which is kind of silly. I mean, JT Ginn threw the least number of innings for us, and he's probably got the best stuff as well. I mean, right. I mean, he's filthy.
Yeah.
He was on the mound for the final out.
Right. I mean, he got four appearances, and I told him that anytime that there's a big game, he's going to pitch. And he did. He pitched four games, and they were all the big ones, and it's because he's lights out. He's absolutely lights out.
Is Landon Marceau best changeup?
Marceau's best changeup.
Yeah, I would assume he also get best control.
Yeah, our best three changeups were his, Dieter, and a Liberatore.
I'm just thinking, JJ, maybe I'm wrong, but like 15 years ago, didn't seem like high school kids who are seniors had changeups. Now you get three that you're talking about. I'm sure there are more.
No, it is.
But the advanced polish seems
it is amazing. The polish is amazing. And but again, you talked like when you talk about these are the best lineups we saw, these are the best pitching staffs. But the thing that did stand out from what I watched, and obviously Carlos, you saw every, you were there for every game. Carlos watched every game. I didn't watch every game, but the difference in pitching, the difference in the physicality, the difference in that basically your staff was a group of guys who, in most cases, if they wanted to, could, you know, they didn't because they pitched, but they could just blow guys away. I mean, that
maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Correa. Hankins has that type of fastball where he can blow you away. But those teams are smart and they'll cheat. And if you don't have a secondary pitch, they'll figure it out. And Correa, if you saw in the game when Liberatore started, they early on thought, okay, he's just going to throw fastballs, and they got it. They got a few hits, and then he's like, okay, I'm going to start mixing in the rest of what I got. And then
a couple hard outs as well.
Yeah, and well, I mean, they got two guys on in the first, second, and third. The guy hit a double off the wall, but. Once he started mixing in his curveball and his changeup, then they were all confused and he dominated the rest of the way. But some of the teams, yes, some of the teams you can just, if you got a guy throwing in the low to mid 90s, they're gonna overpower. But they figure out ways to get the ball in play or to put pressure on you. You got to throw strikes . Fortunately, we had a whole slew of guys who did that.
How much did it stand out? We've talked so much. And if you're a baseball fan, all you're hearing about is three true outcomes in the major leagues, home runs, walks, strikeouts. How different is the international approach? How different are the offensive approaches for Japan, Korea, et cetera, Canada, Cuba, versus and how long does it take? Did it take your team long to adjust to that?
I mean, their approach is to put the ball in play, to get the guys over.
It's a little more old school.
It's a little more old school. It's a little more small ball. And so you got to pitch. You can't just throw hard because they're going to figure out a way. But our guys did fine. Our coaching staff, helped them along the way. And fortunately, they all had enough variety and stuff to really give these other teams some trouble.
And Carlos, I think you mentioned this earlier. Maybe it was off air, but I don't feel like we mentioned it enough. Ethan Hankins had 27 strikeouts in what, 12 innings, three hits allowed,
13 and 14.
So pretty dominant
effort
for Ethan Hankins throughout. And this is a guy who didn't think he'd made the team after his trials performance, Matt. So
yeah,
we were in Minnesota. Carlos, why don't you take us a little bit through the position players? You watched all these games, and I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, you're fine,
But that's the thing. We're talking about how great this pitching staff was, but the lineup and the defense by these guys was outstanding as well.
Carlos. Yeah, just four errors for the whole tournament. I think the fielding percentage of this group is the best in at least 7 years from the 18U, just from the big events that you guys are playing every year. But one guy I wanted to touch on that I don't think we've talked about a lot is Mike Ciani, who's your leadoff hitter, center fielder, captain. And a guy who really disrupts things on the bases, and it seems like the whole tournament he was your consistent hitter, kind of getting things started. When you guys were maybe struggling a little bit offensively, he would find a way to get on base, get things started with his
feet. He's a grinder. He's a really tough out. He's going to battle in there. He's got a great approach. Mm-hmm. He'll go oppo when he needs to. He can also pull it. Got great bat speed and strength. He did a great job for us. He took walks. He whenever he did put the ball in play, he would beat out the double plays, which was big in the Korea game. I think he did it twice, and both times I think he ended up scoring. I think he led the tournament in runs scored. I know he led us.
Yeah, he had 12 for you guys, and I think the next closest was 8 with Tristan Casas. So
right, and so I mean he was, you know, he's a returner and he's a great kid, make up through the roof, and the kids really looked up to him, and he was our vocal leader. So yeah, I really couldn't have asked for anything more out of him.
Definitely, and then kind of just going through the lineup, Carter Young played second base for you guys the whole time, and I think led you in on base percentage. How impressive is it for a guy who's literally the youngest of the team?
Which is why I call him fitting it. Young Carter is actually what I call him. Young Carter. He's just a little baseball rat. You know, he loves to play. He actually can catch a little bit too, which was another value that he brought to this team. If we had an emergency situation, he could run back there, but. You know, he played on the 15U team last year in the World Cup, so he's got experience beyond his years, and he's a very dependable, consistent, quality at bat guy, which is why he hit in the two hole. He walks a lot, he puts the ball in play, and grinds at bats, and I think he ended up leading our team in on base percentage. Yeah. But you know, he's got a chance to play on this team 2 more years. Because he doesn't turn 17 until next year. So he got a chance to be a leader on this team for a while.
Yep. And then kind of just stepping through the lineup, I guess, Jared Kelenic, he's a guy who's been around with you for a little bit and seems like he might be one of the best pure hitters in this high school class.
He's just one of the best all-around tool packages, you know, in this class. Because he's outstanding defensively, run, throw. He's got great power, but it's not this lofty manufactured power. It's part of just how strong he is, and he hits line drive home runs, which is really impressive.
Seems like he's got really great balance at the plate and just doesn't ever pull out on anything. Just got a very good approach up there.
Yeah, he's got as good a chance as anybody to hit, and he's gonna hit for power.
And then Nolan Gorman probably didn't have the tournament he wanted to have, but picked it at third base and might be one of the best power hitters in the class as well. What are your thoughts on him just overall as a player?
It's a dynamic bat. He's gonna hit a lot of home runs. He really came a long way with going opposite field while he was with us. I think it was something he wasn't used to doing much of, and I think by the end of the tournament he had 5 base hits oppo, which is something I'm really proud of. You know, within him, he had some struggles, but we saw some really good left-handed pitching, and you know, he battled through it, and that smile on his face after the double against Korea in the 9th inning was made the whole thing. My whole trip was made right there. I mean, he was so happy, and seeing the perseverance, and man, what a great job he did defensively. I think he's going to be a plus defender at third, and power hitter, major leagues.
All right, very cool. And then right beside him, Bryce Terang was really consistent for you. You said he can hit pretty much wherever you wanted him to in the lineup if you chose to. Can pick it at shortstop, obviously. And for us, he's the number one player in the class from our last rankings.
Yeah, I mean, first we'll start with his defense. He was exceptional at shortstop. You know, his range, his instincts, his routes to balls. You know, he in my opinion, his arm plays better than what you would just give it as a raw tool grade. You know, which would probably be average, but his release and his understanding and his clock, he knows when to get rid of it quickly. He knows when he's got time to plant and throw. He can throw from all angles. In my opinion, he's a shortstop.
Yeah, and we were talking to the guys earlier, actually. I don't think I'd seen him actually let loose because I've just never seen him have the opportunity to need to show it.
He did it a couple times in the gold medal game.
He goes in the hole and he'll show it, but it just seems like he gains ground on the ball well. And
that very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a legitimate defender. And then, you know, offensively, he started out a little slow, and Mike Ciani kind of grabbed the leadoff spot and never let it go.
And
leadoff is really where I think Terang belongs, because he's another grinder type who will make a pitcher work, and he'll take walks, and then he'll get his base hits too. But you can only have one leadoff hitter, and with us being so left-handed dominant, you know, we didn't want to go 3 or 4 lefties in a row, so we had to figure out a way to space them out with our one right-handed hitter and our 2 switch hitters. You know, wherever he batted in the lineup was really just a mechanism of of roster or lineup management. Mm-hmm. But no, he ended up leading the team in hitting, which was no surprise. You know, every single game he's getting one, two hits, and you know, he's an absolute menace on the base pass. Mm-hmm. He's got great instincts and plus base stealer, and he's a gamer. Great kid.
Yeah, and another guy who fits a lot of these categories is Alec Thomas, who's mm-hmm. the last outfielder that we haven't touched on yet. He went perfect 5-for-5 on the bases, stealing for you guys, and then 361 throughout the tournament.
He had a great tournament. And he, you know what he did really well was two out RBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had a knock with two outs and one or two guys in scoring position. Against Cuba, he did it. That was the first one I remember, but I mean, he had a great tournament, and defensively, you know, he's as good as you're going to come across.
Yeah, it seems like you could have thrown him in center if you wanted to, easy. And he'd be fine.
Oh, he's a big league center fielder. Yeah, he's going to be an above average one.
Cool, and I think the last two guys that we haven't talked about, well, three actually, if we talk about Reynaldo Delgado as your designated hitter, a guy who can hit from both sides. I think you said he was willing to play outfield for you guys.
Yep.
It's not really a position mm-hmm. he normally plays. Can play basically anywhere in the infield if you needed him.
Yeah, we found him. I've known mm-hmm. about him, but
yeah.
But he came to our NTIS and got selected to our NTDP this year, which is typically for the next year players. But he came, and I told him, you know, we have one spot open for the trials, but it's mostly an outfield spot. And he said, okay, well, give me an outfielder's glove, and I'm an outfielder, you know, the rest awesome. Of the week. And that you know, that's
the attitude you're looking for.
That's that team mentality that we're looking for, and that really impressed me. He went out there and did a good job, and he hit really well. And being a switch hitter was another value because we needed that guy that could hit right-handed, mm-hmm. but also switch around a lefty if they did have a tough righty. But, you know, he did a great job. He did a great job for us. We knew that if we needed him to, he could play on the dirt too. So he was a really important piece of this puzzle. The Cuba game, he really went off. He's from Cuba originally,
yeah, that was a cool story.
And that was a pretty neat moment to see him perform the way he did in that game.
Very cool. And then another switch hitter, who his approach to the plate is just awesome, is Anthony Siegler, and did a lot of good work for you behind the plate. He got the bulk of the time behind the dish. What does he bring to the table as a switch hitter, a guy who can get on the mound and throw from both sides as well? I don't know if you plan to use him there, but if you needed him, I'm sure he.
You know, maybe
there
in some other years we would have used him, but
yeah.
we only threw JT Ginn three innings, so we weren't gonna throw Anthony out there whenever we had JT and Denenberg and those guys ready to go. But you know, first and foremost, he was a stopper defensively. You know, he handled our pitchers well, blocked through the ball. He's got a plus arm. He's an athlete back there, but. You know, at the plate, he was a quality of bat. Now, his batting average wasn't great. Mm-hmm. I think he had some bad luck on the old BABIP, but he actually...
I think there's no such thing as old BABIP. It's only on the new BABIP. four for 22, but a 419 on base.
Right, yeah, but his on-base was, yeah, his on-base percentage was the best on the team. Took a ton of walks and got on base for us, and he did a great job.
And then how nice is it to have a guy like Will Banfield as your backup catcher?
Yeah, Will could have caught every game for us too.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have been just fine defensively. Will was as good as anybody there.
William Banfield V.
The fifth.
As it says on the roster.
That's right. That's right. And you know, he displayed that 70 arm that he has, and he catches velocity like it's nothing. And you know, he offensively struggled a little bit here and there, but he took his walks also. He ended up hitting a home run, mm-hmm. you know, against South Africa, which was awesome. And you know, he was right there with us. He was a played a great role in this team.
Have you talked about Nolan Gorman yet?
Talk about Casas?
We talked about him earlier, but we didn't go through him just now. But if you want to touch on him again,
I'm just fascinated by those two guys. That's what I was saying. Those two corner power bats.
Yeah, the best power bats.
Well, the top of the draft is usually the high school, the middle player, and then the big high school arm.
Mm-hmm.
But here's two corner power bats who feels like, Matt, they have such long track records. Tristan Casas has been famous for a long time, and Nolan Gorman basically won every high school home run derby he seems like he's ever entered, and plays an outstanding third base. These two guys just really seem a little different than the average high school corner power bat. Is that fair for me to higher expectations for them?
Well, they've got unbelievable raw power, which... You know, every year there are some guys that have unbelievable raw power. both of them take their hitting very seriously. But then take it a step further, they both take their defense very seriously, which I think that's the difference with these kids. I mean, I think Gorman could be a Gold Glove third baseman, and I know Costas will be a Gold Glove first baseman. I mean, he takes his defense as seriously as he takes his hitting, and he takes his base running that seriously too. Now, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he works at it very intently.
Right.
And we've seen Tristan play third base, and he might not play that moving forward, but to see him move around as well as he does for as big of a guy as he is really impressive.
And he pitched for the team last year.
He did. Yeah, so he did
everything.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a baseball player. He's not just a power hitter. He wants to be the complete package of a hitter. He works very hard on going the other way. He knows the strike zone, and he's got ridiculous power.
And whichever game it was where Gorman drops to the nine hole, I mean, that happened with Blake Rutherford 2 years ago on the 18U team. He wound up hitting a grand slam against Japan out of the nine spot, but the way one of these scouts put it to me is like, this guy, Gorman, could be the top player in the class, and he's hitting nine hole with that kind of power.
Well, during trials, he went on a tear, you know, against some of the pitching that he was facing, too.
Right.
The pitching he was facing was outstanding, and he was red hot and really, really put himself there near the top of the draft. And then we went to Canada, and he saw a lot of left-handed breaking balls and off-speed and got himself into a little bit of a funk.
Mm-hmm.
That Kawabata guy got him a bunch of times. And so it took him a few days to kind of clear his head of that and to work back to trying to hit the ball opposite field and, get back to where he can make contact. And I think that may be the roughest, most difficult stretch he's ever gone through, which I think was probably a good thing for him.
Right.
And he came out of it at the end. In the last three games we played, he was a big part of us offensively. So, I think he's got a chance to be a four tool guy, and the speed actually is better than you'd think. Top of the draft is not out of the question with him.
The thing that stands out, you know, looking down the road for these guys and looking at the guys who have done this in past years, this really is something that for them, like we talk about having to go through these adjustments, having to adjust not just to a team first approach, but also having to adjust to, okay, I wore it today, now I got to come back out tomorrow and put this behind me. It really is essentially a taste of what they're going to be facing down the road in a very highly competitive environment in games that really matter. I mean, there's a lot of development that these guys go through during this stretch with Team USA as well, is there not?
No doubt. This is the most developmental time that these players are going to get, at this age. They're around high-level coaching, and we're playing baseball games, to win games as a team. And take some players longer than others to get it. I mean, Casas gets it. I mean, he had one game. I was sitting with him, and he went 0-for-5. And I was sitting there with him. We won the game, and all of his at-bats were productive. And he was, man, I think that's the best 0-for-5 game I've ever had. and he wasn't thinking about I was 0-for-5. He was thinking about I was able to help the team win with each one of my offers. And that's when you finally get that as a hitter, and you know that you're a good hitter, and you know that everybody else knows that you're a good hitter, and you don't necessarily have to go 4-for-4 in order to be a good hitter. You can go 0-for-5 and still be a good hitter with your at-bats. That's when the maturation process really starts to show itself, and he's there. And, there's some guys that need to work to get there, but being with this team is one of the best experiences that a kid this age can possibly have in getting towards, their ultimate goal of playing in the major leagues. Something that is difficult with this group is that, yeah, we're trying to play as a team. We're trying to win a gold medal. We're trying to develop. We're trying to teach them things. And they're doing all that while also being watched by scouts, And so they're aware. that everything that they do is being noticed, and getting out of their comfort zone while being watched by scouts is a difficult thing. And so they just have to trust, you know, the process and trust us, and know that, you know, it's going to be better for them in the end, even if they struggle a little bit early. You know, if they really buy in, then the good things are going to happen.
So if this is, we're putting on the cover of the magazine, best 18U team ever. The wrap up, if it's the best 18U team ever, does this help produce one of the best high school draft classes ever? I mean, you've scouted for, 8 years with the St. Louis Cardinals. You covered the draft here for a year. How does this high school class, having been around 80 of them at Tournament of Stars and many more all year, how does this high school class shape up in your mind? You could throw a 20-80 scale grade on it. I mean, with the 80 being the first 10, eight of the first 10 players say are high school draft picks. That might be an 80. It's 8 out of 10. What kind of grade you throw on this draft? A draft class.
This team has to be at least in consideration for one of the best. I mean, it's the only team to go undefeated since 1989. We also went undefeated in our training. I haven't seen all those teams, so I'm not exactly sure where it fits, but statistically, you know, it's as dominant a team as I think this program's had, which is awesome. But how it translates to the draft, I guess we're right here next to it, so we feel like every one of these guys is going to be a first rounder, but there will be other players that pop up.
Mackenzie Gore wasn't on this 18U team last year. Wound up going third overall.
I think the difference between this team and years past is that this year we actually were able to get all the guys that we felt like belonged on this team. We didn't really miss on an arm leaving a guy out there. Where like last year Gore we weren't able to get, but I do think that this draft class is better though than some in the past. So, I guess you could go conservatively a 60, or if you want to get aggressive, you could say it's a 70.
Because it's an unusual college class. I mean, just the top of the college class are some corner bats like Baker and Beer, some undersized players like Madrigal, pitchers who didn't pitch this summer. I mean, like Brady Singer's, you know, he's outstanding, but he didn't sign out of high school for a reason, you know. McClanahan at South Florida has had Tommy John surgery. So there's
I wouldn't high school say players. It's out of the question that a third of the first round comes from this team.
Yeah.
Like now that
10 first round picks would be exceptional.
It would be exceptional. It's not out of I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it does happen, I won't be surprised.
And we've had two drafts in the last four where the top three players have been high school, 2014, 2017. This high school class seems like it could challenge that or exceed it.
Mm-hmm.
These are some top 10 pick talents on this team.
And the thing I'd say with that is that it's not just that they'll go at the top, because you could have, depending on the draft class, you could have three guys go the top, and three high school guys go 1, 2, 3, but you may have another year where two high school guys go in the top three, but those two are significantly superior.
That's what I'm talking about. Just for example, we talked about Cassis and Gorman. If you just compare those guys to Luke and Baker and Seth Beer, if you're looking for bat-only prospects, well, Gorman can play third base. And Cassis might be able to play third base. He certainly can play third base. He's certainly a more accomplished defensive player than his college peers. So, I mean, like, the college players are more famous for the average draft follower. But Tristan Cassis and Nolan Gorman are just two high school bat examples where they're corner power bats who have better resumes than their college counterparts. And those college counterparts are studs.
Yeah.
Seth Beer was awesome as a freshman, and so was Luke and Baker. And they're both good as sophomores. I'm not banging on those guys. I'm just saying these high school guys are better. Their wood bat track records are better.
And their games, I think, are a little more well-rounded.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, especially when you take off 3 years, you know,
and
of
Bryce
age.
And Bryce Terang versus Nick Madrigal, that's a fascinating discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Bryce Terang well enough, but I know he's left-handed. Plus runner. Now, I got 7 times on Nick Madrigal. Let's face it. I'm in the bag for Elk Grove High right now, and I'm all about Nick Madrigal. And, you know, but it would be very unusual to have a 5'7", 160 guy go 1-1.
Yeah.
But for me, he's the best college guy.
Madrigal?
Position player-wise. because he's. I think he can play shortstop. He's a seven runner. If you're going to be little, be a seven runner. Mm-hmm. And we live in a world where the best player in Major League Baseball might be a 5'7 second baseman in Jose Altuve. I mean,
the big thing with those two that you're talking about
category,
is
sorry.
Any scout that I've talked to about Bryce Turang is convinced he's going to play shortstop. And that's not the case with Madrigal. Whether
correct.
Personally, you're convinced that's correct.
He doesn't even play in his own team.
Yeah.
But
which is crazy. I love King
Green. Yeah. I mean, both those guys.
But that's exactly right, though. Yeah. Bryce Turang is more likely to be a shortstop. And he doesn't have a 7, I don't think, on the card. Does he have a 7? It's a lot of 6s.
Well, the bat could be.
Could eventually. Be a 7. If you
last think... year or this time, I would have said absolutely it's a 7.
Okay.
And he struck out just once in this spring season. I want to keep reminding people that just one time.
And a very, very good league. Again, and this is not talking that he was playing in the Dakotas.
Yes, he was playing in Southern California in one of the best leagues
and
in the country.
And with a target, everybody knows this guy was on the 15U team 3 years ago with Hunter Green and Royce Lewis on that team. So
it's hard it's hard to wear that 1-1 target on your back for multiple years in a row.
Right.
Everybody's looking for something and everybody's like, oh, wait a minute, he's not 1-1. Well, there's only one person who's 1-1.
Right.
Right. And so just because he's not perfect over 1 day or 5 day stretch, I mean, nobody is, you know. So,
but it's something you guys have him at 161, just like on the USA Baseball side, just like Nick Madrigal, 161. So, just
I think Bryce is a little taller,
right?
Bryce is probably a little better hitter.
But for everything that the college side has, hey, Brady Singer's awesome.
Yeah,
he was a man in Omaha, and he's a man most of the year. Ethan Hankins probably does it easier. He has easier velocity than Brady Singer. And he hasn't gone in there to take a physical and come out of it. With Brady Singer went in, got the physical, didn't have the same offer when he came out. Put it that way.
Yeah.
So they're just dings. I just think you go up and down the top of the college class. There are good players there. When you see their counterpart on the high school side, their counterpart on the high school side generally has a higher ceiling and fewer warts. And we're a year out, 9 months out, but just... me looking at it from afar.
264 days out.
That's why Carlos is the draft guy. That's also a great answer. But I'm just looking at the top of this high school class. I think people need to prepare. And we wrote about this year when the draft was over. The risk reward is so more significant on the high school side. The reward is greater. And to get an ace at the top of the draft, you want to get an ace on your major league team. It's better to risk $7 million on Hunter Green or Mackenzie Gore or Ethan Hankins or Liberatore than it is to do that in free agency and miss at $200 million.
Yeah.
So, and those guys don't even get to free agency. So I think baseball, if you're a draft fan, prepare for the 2018 draft to be high school heavy in the first round and especially in the first 10 picks.
Somebody's going to get in round pick 20, a really good arm. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, there. You just said two names there, but I mean,
yeah, I didn't mention Wilcox. I didn't mention some
of these
guys.
I mean, it was Wilcox and there's Rocker,
JT Ginn,
Mason Denneberg has a chance to.
He sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and he's a great athlete with
he's
great stuff.
6'4" and can do a backflip standing up. I don't know if we talked about this.
He can punt a football 60-something yards.
Yeah, he's a freak, man.
Yeah, I mean, and. You know,
nice punter reference. I had a punter in the draft. I can remember like a big time punter since what? Littlebrooks?
I mean, only 10 people can go in the first 10 picks.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah.
Like we're. I mean, we haven't. You didn't say
we've
Ryan.
We mapped out 10.
You didn't say Ryan Weathers. I mean, like
no.
All those guys are gonna go somewhere in the first round, and somebody's gonna get a really good player mm-hmm. in that. Like Shelby Miller went.
Right. 20-some, yeah.
19th?
Yes, something like that.
I mean, I remember I was there. And so somebody's going to get a guy like that around that point.
Yeah, it's a good class. So it's exciting to – it's exciting talent. And I really do think – I don't know if you guys touched on this while I was stepped away, but the top of the U.S., it just seems like every year the 18U team gets a little bit better every year. And I know that there are questions when you see there's almost 30% of the minor leagues is – international right now, but the top of the draft class, I feel like we're in an upward trend in this country. The best players are better than they were 15 years ago. They certainly seem like they're more skilled, Matt, than their counterparts were. I mean, you were around 15 years ago, but is that some of the feedback that you get from some old timers?
Yeah. This is really fun to watch. You know, these guys, and now they just got to continue to learn how to play and put together team mentality. But the arms, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that this isn't as good as it's been, and continue to improve. I see what's out there, you know, coming up in the next couple of years, and you know, I'm pretty excited about, you know, the teams that we have coming for next year and the year after.
But the bar's been set pretty high by this 2017 club, and now just go do it again, Matt. So we'll next event on the horizon, the NHSI, and we always look forward to that.
The NHSI is going to be a lot of fun this year. We got some really good talent coming.
I think you need to use more emoji-type language for describing the NHSI. It's going to be lit. It's going to be straight fire. It sounds better than just fun. So
It's going to have six national team
alumni
from this year. And I think it'll have six or seven first-rounders.
Also fun. We look forward to that. That'll probably be the next time we try to podcast with you. But this was fun. So go back and revisit last year's pod. We did it late September last year as well.
No, we did it in October.
October? Well, you told us that Royce Lewis was going to be the first pick in the draft. And
I did.
And he was. So
who's going to be the first pick in the draft?
Yeah, that's the question we got to ask.
We don't know who has the first pick yet. Matt knew then.
Yeah, we don't know who has the first pick yet, so I can't.
Philadelphia Phillies and San Francisco Giants.
San Francisco Giants and White Sox. Giants,
oh, the Giants
Sox.
Have passed the Phillies in losses. Mama.
57-90.
They still are a half game back because they have two more wins but one more loss. So that's a tight race coming right down
to
the wire.
White Sox are in that too.
Yep.
They are, but I trust in the Giants' ability to pull away from the pack because I think they're really bad.
A lot of it may depend on how many games they have left with the Dodgers.
Yes, it might. So.
And I don't know which way that is. I would say that would be to ensure they don't get the
right
one. But now maybe, no, that'll actually help them to not get the number one pick.
But it was a lot of fun, Matt. Thanks for being here. We'll put you on the spot next time for who goes number one. That prognostication looked really good last year. So. You sure you don't want to do that?
Yeah, I'm gonna hold my tongue on that one for a little bit longer.
You were pretty good on it last year. It was I used that line a lot. So for Matt Blood and Carlos Collazo and JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. I want to thank you again for tuning in today. Today's podcast was sponsored by Baseballism. Don't forget to shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more. We'll be back soon with another podcast here at Baseball America. So long, everybody.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.